ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
How do you build a winning football team? I think there's more than one way to crack the egg.
Oh, yeah.
To cook the egg, I should say. There's really only one way to crack the egg.
Well, that's not true. You could crack it
wrong. I guess you could slam it against a wall, smash it over somebody's head, which is big in my Easter.
Let's see. Okay, there's
confetti eggs.
There's two ways to crack an egg. There's a way to do it correctly, like the Kansas City Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
You crack it, it falls in, everything's fine. Or you could crack it like the Houston Texans, and you crack the egg, but then the shell falls in.
Yeah. You know what the irony with that is?
Disaster.
Is that both of those teams traded up for a quarterback in the same draft.
Yeah.
Of course, the Chiefs with Pat Mahomes, the Houston Texans with Deshaun Watson, but the Texans got some mileage out of Deshaun. He got some mileage out of Houston. But Julian's point, like, because I think that the best way to construct a winning roster in the NFL is to build the team and then plug in that quarterback. I think the Jets are a good example of this. The Jets have a really good football team for whatever reason. Now they're in the market, supposedly going to get Aaron Rodgers. I think we all think Aaron Rodgers is going to be a Jet.
I don't know,
kind of
man.
Semantics. He'll be a Jet. They'll figure it out.
They're really, apparently, what's the real issue is that when Aaron Rodgers went on the Pat McAfee show and said he was 90% retired.
He's going to be a Jet. Like they're playing.
And the
they're playing
Jets
poker.
Are like,
there's
and
no
the,
deadline.
And the Jets like compensation. They were like, wait a minute, is he going to retire after one season? I think really that they're concerned that it's going to be Brett Favre 2.0. That he's going.
So
to
you
play.
Think the Jets are the ones that are balking on this?
I think they're like, well, if he's only going to play here for a year, why are we giving up X amount of capital?
I think it's just a very complicated trade. There's no deadline until the draft comes around. I don't. He's going to be a Jet.
I really think that Aaron Rodgers. They're concerned that Aaron Rodgers is going to be Brett Favre 2.0.
Okay.
And play for them for a year and then one out.
We'll see what happens. But everybody thinks that the Jets are going to trade for Aaron Rodgers. Like, they built a really good team. They're trying to trade for Aaron Rodgers.
Yep.
That's supposedly going to make him a Super Bowl contender. They missed badly on their number two pick a few years ago, Zach Wilson, when they could have had Chase, Surtain, Chandler Parsons. Or Chandler Parsons. Micah Parsons. So they could have had any one of those three guys. Instead, they were held hostage to taking a quarterback and took Zach Wilson. That's my biggest fear when we look at this draft, is that the Texans are being held hostage to taking a quarterback, whether it's because of the fan base, because of Cal McNair. Whatever the case may be, Texans should not fall to the idea of being held hostage by QB. Let's look at the last 10 Super Bowl champions real quick, Joe George,
mm-hmm.
filling in for Joel Blanks, or Charles filling in for Joe George. The Chiefs won it last year. They traded up to get Mahomes at number 10. They were already a winning team. The Rams traded for Matt Stafford to win the Super Bowl. The Bucks signed Tom Brady. The Chiefs won it again. Same thing with Pat Mahomes. The Patriots drafted, and I know it's a big anomaly, they drafted Tom Brady in the sixth. The Eagles, while they did trade up for Carson Wentz at number two, they won the Super Bowl with free agent veteran Nick Foles. Patriots again with Brady. Broncos in 15 when they won it, they signed Peyton Manning. Patriots again in 14, and then the Seattle in 13, they drafted a quarterback in the third round. The last 10 Super Bowl champions, they did not draft a quarterback with the first top nine picks of the draft. So, like, what is the goal for the Texans? Because, again, I'm getting sick and tired of this Houston Texans need to win now mentality. They got to do everything to field the best 53-man roster for next season. No, D'Amico's on a 6-year deal. He can play the long game here. He can look at the forest. He does not need to be looking at the tree.
But what is the long game?
That's why I wanted to find what's the goal for the Houston Texans. What do you want the goal for the Houston Texans to be?
If you look at D'Amico's contract, I would say you want the Texans to be a real AFC title contender by year three of D'Amico Ryans.
Okay. I'm okay with that because...
And that means if you don't take a quarterback this year and you take one next year, that the expectation is that like a Caleb Williams or a Drake May would be AFC title ready their second season, which is realistic.
Why does it have to be the draft, though? Because, again, like, look at these quarterbacks that have won a Super Bowl.
I know.
Like, Aaron Rodgers, like, if the Jets win the Super Bowl this year with Aaron Rodgers, they traded for Aaron Rodgers. Tom Brady was signed as a free agent. Peyton Manning was signed as a free agent.
No, you're right.
So Matthew Stafford was traded to. What if the Chargers upset Justin Herbert, and Justin Herbert pulls Deshaun Watson where he demands a trade, and the Houston Texans, all these draft capital, they went BPA at 2, they went BPA at 12, they have 2 first-round draft picks next year. They're a team that has as much draft capital. They don't have the most, but they have a lot of draft capital relative to the NFL. What if they build this really good roster, and then all of a sudden there's a quarterback that is out there, and you're like, Because that makes a lot of sense for the Houston Texans to do at this point in time.
It does. But the reason why I don't think you can project that is it's fantasy land.
You can't project it. Absolutely not. But you know what?
No Cleveland Browns fan would ever have predicted that they would have Deshaun Watson as their starting quarterback. So I get it. There are quarterbacks that will be available. Could it be Joe Burrow? Could it be Justin Herbert? Yes. 100%. Could there be the next Lamar Jackson who's
just unhappy? Or what about the next Tom Brady, the next Peyton Manning, the next Aaron Rodgers? That's why you build a team that's not dependent on a quarterback.
I agree, but it's so fantasy land.
Not really. This happens every year.
Does it?
Yeah. Again, look at the last quarter. Okay. Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl title with Denver. Tom Brady won a Super Bowl title with Tampa Bay. Matthew Stafford won a Super Bowl title with the LA Rams. Anybody currently could sign Lamar Jackson to an offer sheet.
They can't, but
Deshaun Watson was traded last year.
But you're banking on who then? You're thinking it's like Joe
Burrow. No, not necessarily. You're putting yourself in a position to attack when the opportunity arises. And if it's not a player.
I just don't see those quarterbacks there. I don't think those next guys are going. They don't exist.
Okay, that's fine. And maybe it is through the draft. But you put yourself in a position to attack that quarterback. The Houston Texans. 100%. The Houston Texans currently attacking quarterback. Why? People talk a lot about Lamar. The Texans could sign Lamar Jackson to an offer sheet. Right now, they could do that. And then if the Baltimore Ravens don't match that offer sheet, the Houston Texans give up their next two, the ones that they own. The Houston Texans' first-round draft picks go to Baltimore as compensation because he was, non-exclusive?
Yeah.
Or exclusive, I always get those confused. So the Texans could do that right now. But why are the Texans going to spend all this money and draft capital on a quarterback whenever they're going to win six games with Lamar Jackson? They're not going to do that because they're a team right now that isn't in position to strike for that quarterback.
No, and look, there always are other guys.
But if they build a team, because you go Will Anderson at two, best player available at 12. Next year, you go Marvin Harrison, best player available, the Cleveland Browns brick. And maybe this is offseason at 25, where you're like, okay, now we can win. Now we can go win if we sign that retread quarterback or we sign that disgruntled, we trade for that disgruntled QB. There are so many ways to acquire a Super Bowl winning quarterback, and we've literally seen it play out in the last 10 years, and we get married to this idea, I have a bad team. I have a quarterback that's not very good, so I need to draft a quarterback and then build around that quarterback. I think that's backwards.
But see, but there's a reason why 90% of teams have done it that way. Because it's the most realistic option. I know other teams have done it, but who's the next Peyton Manning that's available? He could have been a Texan. He could have been a Titan.
It's just as easy to win a Super Bowl title with Peyton Manning drafting him one than it is to trade for Peyton Manning late in his career.
Those quarterbacks don't grow on trees. It's easier to find them through the draft.
It's easier
to find a franchise quarterback in the draft than it is in free agency or via trade. 100%.
Joe, if you look at the franchise last year, the 14 teams last year in the playoffs, three of them were top five picks at the quarterback position.
I know.
Most of them were not drafted in the first round at all.
But it's easier.
Half of them were outside of the first round.
But it's easier to find them in the draft than it is outside of the draft. I'm not even talking top five.
Is it?
Yes. I would say if you look across the NFL right now, how many franchise quarterbacks on their team were acquired via the draft?
I don't care about franchise quarterbacks that aren't playoff teams. I'm not counting the Bears in this conversation.
No. But you're also only counting Super Bowls. And
no, I'm not. I'm counting last year's playoffs.
But last year's playoffs. There are other.
That's the goal, right?
But Justin Herbert, he's still a franchise quarterback that they acquired via the draft. They just didn't make the playoffs last year. You can look at the Rams, Matt Stafford's tough. The Arizona Cardinals.
That's not tough. The answer is that you acquired them via trade.
Yeah, no, but last year they didn't make the playoffs. He's not included in this exact conversation. Kyler Murray still a franchise quarterback. To me, there are options to get your guy through the draft and, yes, through free agency. But when you look across the league, a majority of them do come through the draft.
I'm a big believer in building the team up to where when you acquire that quarterback, and look.
Yeah, you're ready to win.
It could be a drafted quarterback. I'm okay with that. The Chiefs, they were let's go get Pat Mahomes. That worked out for them. All of these other teams that have been ready to win, go find that quarterback. The Bucks, okay, we feel like we have a really good roster where if we add Tom Brady, we could win the Super Bowl.
For sure.
They did that. The Rams are you know what? We have a really good roster. We were close with Jared Goff, but we scored, 3 points in the Super Bowl with Jared Goff? So we got to go out and trade for that quarterback to put us over the top. And they did that with Matthew Stafford. So, and look, if the Texans tell, if the Texans go quarterback at two, like maybe if it's Bryce Young and he's the highest player on their board, cool. I have no problem with that. But if you're taking a quarterback who you think lesser of than Will Anderson,
just
I have a major problem with that.
Yeah, no,
especially with where you're at as a roster. Like, if you were a team that was ready to win, if you were really good across the board, but you were just missing out on that quarterback, okay, then reach for that quarterback. But whenever you're so far away from being a playoff team, and this is why I wanted to find the goal, and I'll agree with that goal, like, you should be contending for the playoffs 2025.
I think next season,
okay, that's fine.
Next year, with where you're at as a roster, mm-hmm. whether you draft a quarterback or not, next year you should be challenging for the AFC South. And then I think the following years you should be, I guess it's maybe that second year of D'Amico or that third year is win a playoff game. I guess maybe it's year four, you're thinking AFC title, year five, Super Bowl. Like, and hopefully you can move that timeline up. But
let's,
like,
just use that goal, though. Let's just use year five Super Bowl champion.
Yeah.
That's obviously very optimistic, pie in the sky. But if you're not, like, trying to achieve that, what are you really trying to do anyways? Like,
yeah, I mean, really, that timeline's probably too slow. Like, you probably should be trying to do
so.
Quicker.
Winning a Super Bowl championship in 2025 or 2027 seems pretty optimistic.
But see, where I disagree with you is that if you go with the draft route and you get it right, it changes your timeline. Because the Bengals roster, in general, was one of the worst in the NFL. Yes, they had T. Higgins and Joe Mixon, right? Mm-hmm. But they got Joe Burrow, and yes, he got hurt, so they got Ja'Marr Chase. There was a fallout. Besides that, franchise player, who else did they have? Jesse Bates. That's it. The Bengals were an awful football team. They had one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL, but they drafted a franchise quarterback because they got it right.
How many Super Bowls have they won?
It doesn't matter.
Does it not? That's the goal, right? The goal is to win it all?
Yeah, but like, you're acting like having Joe Burrow was a mistake.
I was being a little bit facetious.
I know you are.
The Bengals are capable of winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah,
but does it change the conversation if Joe Burrow never wins a Super Bowl?
No.
Really?
No, because like, you could say, I mean, like Dan Marino.
Okay, but I meant from a team build perspective. Like, I'm not going to think lesser of Joe Burrow.
Yeah, oh yeah, I don't think it changes to me. Joe Burrow's a franchise quarterback.
What if they only get to the Super Bowl that one time? Like, was that the right way to go to build that roster from like the bottom to where it's at now?
I think so.
Yeah, I don't disagree a whole lot with that.
The counterpoint would be like, did the Rams really do it the right way? Yes, they won a Super Bowl, but like, they're going to be pretty awful. Like, they've had no draft picks the last 3 years. Like,
okay, but
each side has a very large negative.
Let's look at it specifically from a Houston Texan viewpoint. Like, I think that we're on the same like path of like, when should the Texans start to win? Like, I don't think either one of us expects the Houston Texans to win 8 games next year. Can they be above 500 in 2024? I think they can go 9-8 in 2024. 2025, can they be knocking on the door of the playoffs? Sure. 2026, should they be in the playoffs? Sure. 2027, can the Texans be a Super Bowl contender with the right build? I think that's within reason. I'm not saying they're going to win it in 5 years, but can they be a Super Bowl contender in 5 years? Because that
should be
the plan. That should be the plan. Everything that you're doing from this point going forward should be about how can we be a contender in 2027? It shouldn't be about winning 8 games in 2023. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. How do the Texans get to that point, though? How do they get there? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joe George in for Blankers. Sir Charles in for Joe George. I'm still Branham. We've laid out the Houston Texan goal. Like, this is what the goal should be. Like, Cal McNair has hired D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans is here to turn the organization around. I don't really care who the GM is. Like, if Nick Caserio is not the GM on May 1st and they bring in this dude from the 49ers, are the Texans losing much? No. If Nick Caserio is still the general manager on May 1st, do things really change a whole lot? No.
No, nothing changes. Like, because if he makes a mistake, someone's going to have to fix it.
Yeah. From like a tangible, how does this play out type of thing, I really don't see who the GM of the Houston Texans being really being that big a deal. Like, it's a big deal. Oh, my goodness, Texans GM is changing. Like, I understand the impact in the news of it. Like, I totally get that aspect of it. But if you move on from Nick Caserio for new 49er assistant general manager, okay, great. You have an unproven GM. Maybe he's better than Nick. Maybe he's worse than Nick. I don't know. Maybe they're the same. If Nick is still here, cool. All right, that's fine. I don't really criticize Nick as much as most for his first 2 years
because
on the job.
All you need is a quarterback, and then everyone's a good GM.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Is Trent Baalke a good GM?
Trent Baalke has a decent resume. Like, Trent Baalke gets ripped, ridiculed,
like
criticized.
Outside of when Colin Kaepernick was playing really well.
He built an unbelievable roster in San Francisco.
Yeah. I mean, but a lot of that was Kaepernick. I mean, because Kaepernick was the moving force when they went to the Super Bowl.
They were winning before Kaepernick, though.
Alex Smith, yeah. They did win with Alex
Smith.
But, like, they... Well, Alex Smith is, to me, very underrated because, like, he's kind of won everywhere he went.
The thing with that, like...
Before
okay,
J.J.
Here,
Watt
here's,
killed
here's
him.
A weird comparison. I'm blanking on the 76ers overpaid dude that the Rockets were, like...
Tobias Harris?
Yeah, Tobias Harris. Like, Alex Smith is very similar to Tobias Harris.
Okay.
Tobias Harris is a good basketball player. Is Tobias Harris overpaid? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
100%. Alex Smith is a good football player. Did Alex Smith ever live up to the billing to be the first overall pick of an NFL draft?
No.
No. So, like, both things can be true. Tobias can be overpaid and good at basketball. Alex Smith could not live up to the potential of being the number one overall pick, but be good at football. So, like, that it's a weird comparison, weird cross-sport comparison, but that's where I was going with that. We laid out the goal for the Texans. In 1-1-8-5, 5 years to win a Super Bowl is very practical. 23-24... blah, 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 6 wins, 24-25, 10 wins, 25-26, Super Bowl contender. I'm not even going to say that obviously the Super Bowl should be the goal.
There is a flaw with it, though.
What do you mean?
With our timeline.
What is it?
If you draft a quarterback at the number two pick,
uh-huh.
5 years means you just went their entire five-year contract, and we are seeing consistently right now the teams having the most success in the NFL, besides the Rams, are teams that have rookie quarterbacks or contracts with rookie quarterbacks. You know, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, like, you're able to add Tyreek Hill to the Dolphins. You're able to add A.J. Brown to the Eagles. So, like, the common belief is that, like, your best chance to build a contender is during a rookie contract. If you don't win a Super Bowl and are not a contender until year five, you're not paying a quarterback $40 million and $50 million.
I mean,
and your cap space has changed dramatically.
It would be the last year of his rookie deal.
Yeah, so, like, you almost want, if you draft a rookie quarterback, you want him to be good. And if you get it right...
That's why I prefer waiting.
Yeah, if you get... Let's say if C.J. Stroud's a franchise guy, your timeline will move up. Like, you will want to win sooner. You
sure.
will try to take advantage of that window.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, 5 years, I think, is almost... Like, worst case?
All right, you're talking crazy now. Like, to be a Super Bowl contender in 5 years is a huge win. It's a huge win for this organization
that's
been the laughingstock of the NFL and has won 11 games in the last 3 years.
You're right.
Like, worst case is the Texans are in a Super Bowl contendership in 5 years? Okay. Like, bump the brakes a little bit. Like, it'd be great if the Houston Texans are a Super Bowl contender in five seasons.
I get your point.
But
at some point, it's time for, like, the expectations of this franchise to change.
Agreed. So set forth the goal to be a Super Bowl contender in 5 years. So let's operate with that as the premise. You're trying to be a Super Bowl contender in 5 seasons. Every move that you're making from now up until that point is trying to win a Super Bowl in 5 years.
Yep.
So it'd be 2028, right? 23, 24, 25, 26, actually 2027. The 2027 season, you're trying to win a Super Bowl. It's the Jeff Luno model. When Jeff Luno took over as the Astros general manager, he said, we're going to try to win this World Series by this point. And everything we do is trying to win a World Series at this point. So, like, he wasn't caught up in the year-to-year, like, deals that he was making or the draft picks he was making. And I understand that baseball is not a great comparison to football because baseball doesn't have the one singular position that matters far more than, like, the quarterback position. But he was making decisions at the time. They're like, well, why isn't he bringing up George Springer? Because he wanted one more year of George Springer on the backside than the front side when they were losing 100
sure.
games. The Texans' mentality should all be about the future. It should all be about D'Amico Ryan's on a 6-year contract. How do we maximize this team in those 6 years? But more about how good we are in the sixth season than how we are in the first season. The Texans don't need to be robbing from D'Amico Ryan's fifth or sixth year to be very good right now in this first season, because frankly, I don't think it's possible. So if the goal is to be a Super Bowl contender by the 2027 season, you're trying to build as good of a roster as you can have prior to the 2027 season. So personally, I believe if you have those long-term goals and you only care about those long-term goals, you don't really care about the short-term goals, which quite frankly, I don't think you should be caring about the short-term goals with this team. Why would you be? I don't get it. 713-780-3776. Why would this team be worried about short-term goals? Makes no sense to me for a team that's won 11 games in 3 years, has a very bad roster, and is trying to build a young nucleus. So if you have that mindset, and you also believe that you want to have a really good team before you plug and play that quarterback, Will Anderson at two is the play. And you figure out another way to get QB, whether it's any of these five plans, whether I don't necessarily like trading up into the top 10 to draft a Richardson or a Levis. Okay. Hendon Hooker. Okay. I hope you're right. Trade for a Mac Jones, Trey Lance. Okay. I can see the appeal to that. If your goal is to win in 5 years, I'm getting one of those former first-round quarterbacks on a sweetheart deal, very, very cheap. I could potentially, best-case scenario, have a quarterback like that lead my team into a Super Bowl contendership in 2027.
Yes, but
if they
goal.
Miss, okay, if they miss, then I have a really good draft pick with Caleb Williams or Drake May.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't. I agree that you need to get your quarterback. I totally agree that you need to get your quarterback.
That's the number one
goal.
Hold
on real quick. Like, you have to get your quarterback. I get that. I get that you have to get a quarterback to reach your goal in 2027. But you don't have to get that quarterback in the 2023 NFL draft.
No, you don't have to, but it is the number one goal. It's the only thing. And
the number one goal is what?
To get a quarterback. To get the guy.
At some point.
Yes, yes, yes. D'Amico Ryan said it himself when he met with the media last week. He said, we have to get the guy. And he said, whether that's a veteran through free agency or through the draft, you have to get the guy. All that matters is you get the guy right. It doesn't matter to me how you obtain that person. You can go, you can try to take a flyer in the third round or fourth round and try to find a Dak Prescott. You can try to take a guy like a Hendon Hooker and develop him. You can take a guy like CJ Stroud and develop him. You can wait for next year. You can wait for a veteran. Like, there's a million different paths to take to find the quarterback. But all that really matters is finding the guy and getting the guy right. Because just because you go the veteran route, you can just as likely acquire Peyton Manning as you do Russell Wilson. So like every time, like there's a way to fail. You know, the main thing you don't want is to be, there's one thing or two teams you don't want to be. Three teams. You don't want to be the Saints signing Derek Carr. You don't want to be the Vikings signing Kirk Cousins. You don't want to be that dumpster fire of an organization, Indianapolis Colts, signing one bum veteran after another. Like, that's what you have to prevent for your franchise going forward. You have to find the guy, and when you go for it once, you got to hit a home run. Like, this franchise can't be doing what it's done for 20-plus years of just misery at the quarterback position.
Yeah, but there's exit plans. The Texans have exit plans, and the exit plans are that they have two first-round draft picks next year.
Where, to your point, if you get the guy you think at two and you're wrong, it's a disaster.
Yep.
And D'Amico Ryans won't be here to win a Super Bowl. Nick Caserio won't be here. If they draft CJ Stroud and he fails, then the coach will get the blame.
I don't know. Like, you could be the Jets and be in a position where, okay, we fell with the number two pick, Zach Wilson, but now we trade for Aaron Rodgers. I don't think it's that cut and dry. Aggie Matt, are you not including the last couple of years as part of the rebuild? Those make people less patient. I really don't. Like, the last 2 years for Nick Caserio wasn't so much about, like, building the roster. One, because Bill O'Brien put him in a bad spot with the salary cap, put him in a bad spot with draft capital. Like, year one, they didn't have a first or a second round pick.
But I do think
last year they could start
are...
building. Like, I get it. Like, I totally get it, but I don't.
Because it's so, but it's hard. They've been a dumpster fire for 2 years. Mm-hmm.
I think that was part of his plan.
It is. And it's like, you know, when I talk to people that are, you know, really the diehard Astros fans that couldn't watch the games when they weren't on TV.
I couldn't watch them.
You know, it seems like sometimes people forget, because of how bad it was, what it was like when they lost 100 games 3 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that I've had to kind of learn, because that's before my timeline when I moved to Houston in 2015. Like, what that 100 loss, that's where the Texans are right now. They are the 100 loss Astros. Like that's the, they are in year two
right.
of a 100-loss season.
Right.
And next year could be year three, just like the Astros. And then at some point, you start building to 2017.
9-2, 9-2, Labdan, Lance, and Harden in Houston would be ridiculous.
And DeAndre Hopkins.
7-5, 7-5, 1-6. You can start winning now and still keep an eye on the future. Stop with the loser mentality. Must be that U of H background. You must be a miserable human being, 7-1-5-6. I don't agree with it either. Like, you have...
Like, you didn't say that at all.
You have to have a priority, though. Like, you have to have a priority. Like, what is your priority? That's why I wanted to define the goal. Like, what is your goal? Is your goal to win 9 games in 2023, or is your goal to be a Super Bowl contender in 5 years? Because if your goal is to be a Super Bowl contender in 5 years, you're going to operate differently than it is to win 9 games in 2023. If your life depended on winning 9 games in 2023 for Nick Caserio and DeMeco Ryans, they're trading the number 2 and 12 pick for veterans that can win them football games immediately.
They probably should have got Jimmy Garoppolo if your right. goal was to win 9 games.
So, like, there is one of those things has to be your priority. So, like, do you want to start winning more games while also, like, the prize is to be a Super Bowl contender in 5 years? Yeah, you want to start to see that improvement. I don't think wins is always the greatest barometer for improvement, but you have to have one as your priority. You have to have one as your goal. One has to be the focal point, and for me, it's 5 years. It's not next year, and this win-now mentality that I'm seeing in Houston is quite frankly odd. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. There is a team in this city, though, that is in win-now mode. It's the Houston Astros. They have a big series starting tonight. Silver boot? I almost called it the silver glove. That's U of H Rice. What is the biggest Astros surprise so far in the 2023 season? 713-780-ESPN. Biggest Astros surprise to date. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Sir Charles in for Joe George, assistant to the regional managers, because Joe George is in for Blankers. He'll be back on Monday. I'm still Branham. 713-780-ESPN. What is the biggest surprise for the Houston Astros so far in 2023? I have some interesting answers. I posted this on my Twitter, at Jeremy Branham. What is the biggest surprise to you? I think there's one obvious one, quite frankly.
I don't know. What's the most obvious one?
Mauricio Dubon.
Oh, yeah. Duh.
Yeah, Mauricio Dubon is the most obvious answer to what is the most surprising thing for the Astros so far. I had one guy. There's some people that you're not allowed to have an opinion on anything baseball until they've played 81 games.
Oh, yeah, I love those guys.
I had one guy saying I tweeted out the question, what is the biggest surprise for the Astros so far in 2023? He said, it's far too early to talk about this.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, why aren't you talking about the Astros? Why do you only talk negatively about the Astros? Why aren't you talking Astros more? And it's just like, what do you want?
Yeah, he said, way too early for this. I said, it's too early to talk. What's the biggest surprise so far? He said, yes, because any two-week period over the course of a 162-game season doesn't reveal anything other than who had a hot or cold streak during that time.
That's great. That's literally what baseball is. That's how baseball works, is hot and cold streaks.
I think the biggest one for me, quite honestly, has been Corey Jolks. Go Cougs. I had doubts that Corey Jolks was going to be a big leaguer. The Astros had doubts that Corey Jolks was going to be a big leaguer. Major League Baseball, every team had doubts that Corey Jolks was going to be a big leaguer. What are you talking about, Branham? Well, the Astros left Corey Jolks unprotected in the Rule 5 draft. Which means that if somebody drafted him in the Rule 5 draft, he's no longer a member of your organization. He's gone. He's done. He now belongs to somebody else. He's now under contract with a different team. But for that team to draft a player out of the Rule 5 draft, he has to be on their active roster all year long. So the Astros were willing to let him go. Every team in Major League Baseball, in turn, said, "No, we're good. We don't want Corey Jolks. We don't want to guarantee him, you know, to be on our active roster. You know what? You don't even have to guarantee him to be there the whole year. You can kick it around for 2 weeks. If you don't like what he's done for you, you can just send him back to the other team." So no team in baseball was willing to take that risk on Corey Jolks. Jolks didn't even have the best spring training for like outfielders trying to make this team. Now, Jolks had a good spring training, but it wasn't Justin Dearden. Justin Dearden had a better spring training than Corey Jolks. Yeah. And a lot of people, when they saw Corey Jolks made this active roster over Justin Dearden, were like, what are you doing, Dana Brown? What are you doing, Houston Astros?
Dana Brown was right.
Like, I'm not going to go as far to say he was right, yes. I'm not going to go as far to say that Jolks is going to have like a better career than Justin Dearden.
No, but I think Dana Brown, I think it has it right in his analysis if it makes more sense to have Justin Dearden getting everyday at-bats versus Corey Jolks. The value there is better with Dearden in the minors. He also, to be honest, like he's a guy no one really thought of. Like he's Astros prospect 101. Nobody really knows who he is. He's not ranked by any major prospect system. And all of a sudden, it's like this guy is going to come up and likely be a heavy contributor to the Astros when right. Michael Brantley retires. Like that's what Justin Dearden's path is right now. He's another Christian Javier. He's another, you know, Luis Garcia that no one knows about and comes up and is probably damn good.
Right. That's what I would I think so too. Like it made sense that they kept Cesar Salazar on the big league roster over Corey Lee.
Yep.
Because they need to give everyday at bats to at least one of their two catching prospects that are the future of the position. Whereas Salazar, you're not worried about him long term. I really don't think they're worried about Corey Jolks long term. They've told us that by leaving him unprotected. But Corey Jolks has had an opportunity. Corey Jolks has had a chance. Corey Jolks has had 34 at-bats, and Corey Jolks has been able to like handle big league pitching. Corey Jolks has been able to represent himself in a very positive light, has been flirting with a 300 batting average all year, currently entering play today, 294 average. He hit his first home run the other day. Like Corey Jolks has established himself. Again, I know it's only been 2 weeks. I know it's only been 34 at-bats, but Corey Jolks this winter was somebody that 30 teams said was not a big leaguer. Now the Astros are saying that he is, and Corey Jolks, I think, has established himself enough, small sample size, sure, that if the Rule 5 draft was happening tomorrow, there's no way Corey Jolks goes undrafted.
I think the biggest surprise for me is just the how hot the start is for Tucker and Alvarez, because it's so hot. I mean, these guys are just crushing the baseball and playing great. And it's not that I don't expect them to play great, but to come out of the gate this good, this quickly for the two best hitters in your lineup has been awesome.
Especially,
and I don't know if that should be a surprise, but like,
well, with Tucker, he started slow. He's like a notorious slow starter.
Yeah, but like 16 RBIs for Yordan Alvarez already?
And he had the two of them, like you would think, okay, Tucker hitting well, not a surprise. Yordan hitting well, not a surprise. But I think when you throw in the caveats that Kyle Tucker has kind of been a notoriously slow starter, I don't think he's as notorious as Alex Bregman as a slow starter, but he's a slow starter. And then whenever you throw in the Yordan Alvarez hand concerns, is that caveat as well? Yeah, I think you're surprised with where Yordan Alvarez and Kyle Tucker are. What is it, 12 games through the season?
The negative 13. The negative surprise would be the strikeout numbers. They're a little bit alarming, and I mean, their last game they only struck out twice, I think it was. But I mean, you had a game where you struck out like 29 times in two games.
Yeah,
like. It's just that's just not Astros baseball.
That's not surprising to me though.
But like, and I know Altuve and Brantley are out, and that's a big part of it. And like, you know, you keep seeing guys leave and come in, and you know, Yuli wasn't always a big strikeout guy. Abreu's numbers have been higher, but it's just you're just so not used to it when you watch the Astros on a day in and day out basis the last 6 years that for them to come out and have such high strikeout numbers to be in the I always forget how to say this. They're one of the worst teams. I was going to say, I can't remember if it was the top of the strikeout numbers or the bottom. But their strikeout numbers are alarmingly bad, especially when you compare them to the rest of baseball. They're some of the worst in the bigs right now as a collective team. Like that's surprising. Just because you don't expect it.
Surface level, if you don't dig into it, Astros, one of the worst teams in baseball at contact, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so it's just surprising that like they're even in that conversation. It's not a red flag or a major concern or something that's not going to change over time throughout the season, but just to see that many strikeouts from this team is shocking.
Yeah. I think when you dig in a little bit deeper, though, it's like, okay, you're losing. Abreu's always been a contact guy, so it's a little surprising that he's striking out at a much higher rate than what you got that position last year. But whenever you're like, okay, Jose Altuve's out, Michael Brantley is out. Those are two of your better contact guys, and now all of a sudden you're replacing Altuve and Brantley with basically a couple of bench players. Well, the strikeout numbers are going to go up, although Mauricio Dubon, who's been filling in mostly at second base, has been the biggest surprise with how well he's hitting.
I mean, it's unreal. I have a dynasty league, and I've gotten butchered by injuries.
You picked up Mauricio Dubon?
And I went with Dubon.
What did you think of Blum's Doobie is Lit the other day?
It's pretty good.
Grade the nickname, or grade the saying, 713-780-3776. Doobie is Lit. What do you think about that? 713?
That's pretty strong.
780-3776.
It's pretty strong.
Is it cheesy?
Well, yes. Sorry, Jeff. I hope we're still friends. It's a little cheesy, but it's also, sometimes when you have something that's that easy, it's okay to be cheesy.
Yeah, it makes sense.
That was very Joel Blank of me. I just rhymed.
Yeah. Blankers would love it. I know he would. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. What is the biggest surprise for the Astros 13 games into the 2023 season? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What is the biggest surprise for the Astros so far, 13 games into the season? Yes, very, very small sample size. Ocho says, the biggest Astros surprise is Dubon's ability to adjust his swing and hit the ball to all fields, becoming the greatest baseball player of all time.
Love it.
He did. He's talked about how he's talked a lot to Yordan. Dusty mentioned that Altuve's been a help for Mauricio. The biggest thing to me is he doesn't fly out much anymore. Like, he's hitting the ball on the line, on the ground. And for a dude that doesn't have power, why are you hitting the ball in the air?
No, it really is like old school, like baseball in a way. Like, it's just get on base. Like, hit it low, let them make mistakes. I mean, it's really been effective for him so far. And it's super encouraging, like, because Aledmys Diaz was kind of an up and down roller coaster at times, but it was a big loss. Like, and it was Marwin Gonzalez to Aledmys Diaz, and it was, who's that next guy? Who's like that next super utility guy that the Astros have always had? And it really feels like the answer is Dubon. You could play him anywhere.
That was my biggest knock on the Astros offseason, was that they needed to bring in a super utility guy.
And maybe he was just here.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm eating crow on it right now, because I was very critical that they, like, Jurickson Profar was that guy for me. Like, sign a super utility guy. Whenever you have a player that inevitably lands on the injured list the 2 to 3 times a year that it happens, if you're lucky it only happens that many times, that can step in like an Aledmys Diaz and play 80 games and give you 250 at-bats. The Astros had it with Marwin Gonzalez. Marwin Gonzalez played more than that. But to have that player that you can count on to be reliable for 80 starts to 100 starts, he's okay with his role, he's not making noise, like all of that. Like, to have that super utility type is, I think every good team needs to have it. I think Ben Zobrist was like the first real super utility dude.
Yeah, with the Royals, Rays, and Cubs. Like,
Astro farmhand.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he was traded. I believe he was in the Aubrey Huff trade, maybe the Dan Wheeler trade. Can't remember exactly. It was either Huff or Wheeler, but yeah, he was an Astro farmhand. He was considered a 4A player by the Astros, and he went on to be, you know, a really good super utility player. So that was my biggest knock on the Astros offseason, was they didn't get that super utility guy. And now the Astros, 13 games into the season, saying, you idiot, Branham, we had him. He's Mauricio Dubon. Dubon's always been a good contact guy. He was worse offensively last year for the Astros than he's been for the majority of his career. But the new approach of, hey, I'm going to go the opposite of the trend in baseball where I'm trying to launch everything. I have good contact, but I don't have power. Let me hit line drives. Let me hit the ball on the ground. It's been nice to see that.
It'd be nice if more players in Major League Baseball did that.
Like a Miles Straw type? Like, yeah, how about you do that?
Yeah.
You know? Miles Straw's actually, I think, had a pretty good start to his season.
Maybe Jake Myers could learn something from Mauricio.
Myers has the pop, though. Like, Myers... Oh, never mind. I'm sorry. I thought you meant Chaz. You're right.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I love Chaz.
Like, Jake should hit the ball on the ground more often.
Biggest surprise. They're letting the Chaz Chomp guys throw out the first pitch.
That is really weird, isn't it?
I mean, it's cool, but, like... Okay. Like, it's just, of all the people that were going to throw out a first pitch, like, they would not have been on my bingo card.
Yeah, I was surprised whenever I saw that. I was surprised when I saw that. How about Chaz McCormick being in the leadoff spot, being a surprise? Yeah, Dusty Baker's right again. Like, Chaz McCormick has looked solid in that
spot.
Was
Dusty Baker right? If Dusty Baker was just right, then it should have been Chaz at the beginning.
Dusty's always right. Dusty's always right.
So it was the right move to put Pena there?
I'm not gonna criticize Dusty Baker's regular season lineups.
Dusty Baker's right now, but he wasn't right away.
I think it's fluid. It's a fluid conversation. Like, you wanted to see if Jeremy Pena was going to pick up where he left off. If he's ALCS World Series MVP in that leadoff spot, we don't bat an eye. We don't say a thing. But then he's like, you know what? He's struggling. Let me move him back down to, you know, a sixth spot where he doesn't have as much pressure. Let me give Chaz a run, some run here and a shot here. I think it's fine. I think it's fine what he's done.
Chaz McCormick's been really, I mean, what he did, that catch the other day in Pittsburgh was incredible. Like, he's playing. Oh, you don't like it? You think it's overrated?
I mean, it's
not like Jim Edmonds great.
But. Jim Edmonds was also a master of that. Jim Edmonds was also a master of having limited range but making diving catches to make everything look way better than it really was.
What's wrong with that? You got to do with, you got to work with what you got to work with.
It doesn't show you how good of a defensive player you are.
No, but it's still a good catch.
Jake Meyers is a better defensive player than Chaz McCormick.
Yeah, too bad he can't.
Chaz McCormick makes better like diving plays, and people think that Chaz McCormick's a better defender than Jake Meyers is. That's not the case. Dusty Baker tells you routinely that Jake Meyers is a better defensive center fielder than Chaz McCormick. Why? Because when they're both in the lineup, who plays center field? Whenever Dusty Baker takes Jordan out of a game because Jordan tells Dusty Baker to take me out of a game, who's playing center field? Who's playing left?
That's officially my favorite thing that happened this week. Filling in for Joel is that we just decide, I think it was on Monday, that Jordan Alvarez just does what Jordan Alvarez wants.
Oh, there's no doubt.
And he comes out of the game, he doesn't play when he doesn't want to play, and he doesn't participate in spring training. I think the real test is going to be, does his hands hurt in spring training next year?
Probably.
I think they will, too.
His hands are going to hurt like around the All-Star game so he can get an extended vacation.
Yeah. I'm almost surprised they didn't hurt during the Pirates series because it's just the Pirates.
Isn't that when he landed? He didn't land on the IL. But didn't they give him some days off before the All-Star game last year?
Yeah, I thought so.
But then he came back for the post-All-Star series against the Yankees. Because remember, they played the Yankees doubleheader.
Yeah.
They swept them. They went to Seattle. Seattle was like, let's make it loud here, dog. And the Astros swept them.
It was awesome.
Yeah, and then the Astros got swept by Oakland after that. But I think it was before the All-Star break. Jordan was like, yeah, I have bad hands. I'm not going to play like these last two or three games. Not going to the All-Star game. Dude was just getting an extended vacation.
I kind of felt like that was an excuse to not have to be in the Derby.
Or vacation.
Yeah.
A couple of extra days. It's not a bad idea. What's the biggest surprise for the Astros in 2023? 713-780-ESPN. People were saying Presley. This is something that you said the other day, even before he blew the save.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, Joe's got some points here.
Good timing.
I felt that outing was silly. Like, the first two hits in that inning, you had a little blooper down the right field line. You had a seeing eye single through the whole left side. Now, the bomb was the bomb. Like, that is what it is. I think Presley's kind of been – I don't think he's been as bad as, like, it looks like. I know his ERA is almost 8.5.
But it's so early that, like, it's one bad outing, that ERA gets so inflated early on in the season.
But I think he's pitched okay. Like, quite honestly, I don't think he was very good in the first game that he pitched. But then we talked about that the other day where he had like four scoreless outings in a row after that bad first appearance. Like, he had the game against Chicago where he gave up the two runs in an inning and Roger Clemens was like, oh no, he's hurt, when he wasn't. And then he had five straight scoreless innings. He had five straight perfect innings. So like, he pitched well. And then in Pittsburgh the other day, gives up a blooper, gives up a seeing eye single, and then gives up a bomb. Be like, oh my goodness, Presley's terrible. No, Presley has been good more this season than he's been bad.
I would like to see what the numbers are early on with runners on base versus not on base. Because I think that's really where you saw Presley shake off pitches the most in the past. Just gut instinct. I have no facts to back this up. But like, because like, Presley would shake off guys more when there was a runner on first. And now you only have 20 seconds when there's a guy on base, and I still kind of wonder if the pitch clock is rushing.
Is he not using pitch com? Like, why is he shaking stuff off?
Well, he was last year.
I thought he'd been using, because he always played with it. He always, like, screw up.
You still shake it off even if it's on pitch com, don't you? Because you're not pushing anything. It's the catcher sending you a signal, and you're still shaking it off, and they're trying to send you something else.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Now,
and I'm not saying,
for the Astros, but, like, Ohtani was calling his own pitches the other day. Did you see that? He was the one wearing it.
And I saw someone complaining the other day. I think it was a Yankees pitcher. They said that it was awful. They pointed to as they were going into the clubhouse. People don't seem to like PitchCom that much.
Oh, really?
It seems like it's kind of falling out of favor.
I don't think it's going. It's not going anywhere, though.
No, because the Astros. That's what Major League Baseball would tell you.
What?
Yeah, that's what Major League Baseball would tell you.
That they put pitch comm in because of the Astros?
Because of trash cans.
Yeah, everybody's
like,
doing it.
Looked like Carlos Correa brought the trash cans with him in Minnesota, by the way.
That was a weird stat in that game.
They crushed the Yankees last night.
That was I saw something on Twitter. It was Ryan Spader, actually. Ryan Spader said something on Twitter yesterday. It was like, okay, I got to see what this is about. He said that it was the first time in Major League Baseball history where the leadoff guy and the second hitter hit back-to-back home runs in the first inning, but not to lead off a game. And I was like, what? I was like, what does that mean?
That's awesome.
And then I went and I looked at it. I was like, oh, they hit around.
That's great.
They batted around the lineup.
I love baseball because, like, baseball is the only sport. And, like, you can get these obscure stories that just, like, they don't happen elsewhere. Like, headlines everywhere today. Bobby Witt Sr. catches foul ball from Bobby Witt Jr. Like, it just feels like baseball is just, like, it's why it's the best game in the world. Like,
the old adage is... Whenever you come out to a baseball game, there's a good chance you're going to see something that you've never seen before.
I love this text from 7869. The biggest surprise is the fans. The way they're panicking when we know the Astros have a slow starting team, and they've started 6-7 for the third time for the third year
in a row.
That's
a great text.
Like, it really is. Like, but I said I love it. I love that the Astros fans have kind of crossed that bridge of being unhinged and demanding greatness from opening day till they win the World Series. And if it doesn't go well, they're going to want everyone fired. And you know it's going to flip. Like, if AJ Hinch is back next year, people are going to be clamoring for Dusty Baker to come back after, like, a week. I love it. I love unhinged baseball fans. I can't wait for the Texans to be relevant enough for you to be unhinged about the Texans. I can't wait for the Rockets to do anything worth a damn so people can be unhinged about the Rockets. I think it's great. I'm all in. It makes sports radio so much fun.
It's good for the drama. There's no doubt about that. I like a good drama. 7869, negative surprise. Is Maldi having catching issues? He led the league in passed balls last year. It really shouldn't be that much of a surprise. I do have one negative. It's a negative surprise. I'm surprised that Luis Garcia has been bad through two starts. Yes, yeah. Way too early.
Would like to see a better start tonight.
Way too early. I understand. I get it. I'm with you. But a surprise that I've had is Luis Garcia getting hit around pretty good in his first two starts. I'm surprised by that. 713-780-ESPN. We do it every Friday at 2. Who said it? We're Joe George. I think you're doing it today, right? Joe George is going to read quotes said from ESPN 97.5 personalities, and I'm going to be the only one guessing who said it. Who said it with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5?